It is a pleasure to be here and to get to know new faces in God's family, and I am grateful for the opportunity of being here. I have to agree with Eric. Sometimes it's hard to describe what this series is about. In fact, after having presented the series a number of times, somebody asked me for a short synopsis, and I had a very hard time putting the short synopsis together. And I'm not going to try to give you a short synopsis here. You're going to have to figure it out by coming to the meetings. And I guarantee you that you will be challenged just as I was when I sat through a similar seminar myself and was challenged by these same concepts as a physician in the audience. And it was a friend of mine, Dr. Horst Mueller, from Germany. He wasn't a friend at the time. He has become a friend since that time, that presented a similar series, Law of Life, that I have kind of adapted, and he has adapted as well. But anyways, I was sitting in the audience, and I was very challenged by what he was presenting. And it has been my privilege to go to many places, including UC Pines, and help others to be challenged as well. And it's a good challenge. And we're going to be talking about health, and I just want to highlight that up front. We are going to be talking about health because we are going to get off on some tracks that you might think, hang on, I thought this was a health series. Hold on. You will find out how everything pulls together at the end and why it pulls together in regards to health. But as we begin, I would like to begin with a word of prayer myself. So if you would bow your heads. Dear Heavenly Father, it's been a busy day. Many of us have had many responsibilities and activities this day. We have sought to come here and run into traffic and here we are. And Lord, we are on the edges of your Sabbath. And it's time to rest. And so, Lord, we take just a few moments now to allow our hearts to quiet down, to realize and recognize that we are in the presence of God here. And to be open to the leading of your Holy Spirit, that you, Lord, may be our teacher tonight and through the rest of this weekend, and that you may show us, yes, painful things of ourselves, that you may set us free. And Lord, may we find in your truth that which will set us free. And Lord, now use me as your instrument. And thank you for doing so. In Jesus' name,
amen.
I don't know about you. I'm interested in treating the cause and not just the symptoms. We are all familiar with symptoms. You know, you stub your toe and it hurts. You cut your finger and it hurts and it bleeds and so on and so forth. We are familiar with symptoms, and we do like to treat symptoms. Don't get me wrong, it's good to treat pain and so on and so forth. But really, we want to understand why something is happening the way that it is. And so we're interested in causes. So if we're interested in causes and we want to treat the cause, and we're going to be talking about health, then we must logically ask the question, or we must challenge ourselves, what is the cause of disease? Any thoughts?
Mostly mental.
Okay, mostly mental. Sin? Environment? Yes? Okay, an interference in the functioning of the body inside. Okay, yes. Mold and fungus. All right. Yes. Stress. All right. All right, so we have a number of ideas of things that might be the cause of disease. Well, we could ask specifically, well, what's the cause of cancer, right? That's one of the diseases, or in fact, a number of diseases. It's not just that cancer is a single disease. It's actually many different diseases that cause cancer, or that are what we call cancer. What about diabetes? What about coronary artery disease? Right? What's the cause for all of these things? And can you successfully treat the cause if you don't know what the cause is? Maybe. You might trip over it and get to it by accident. But we don't want to trip over things and get to them by accident. We want to be very purposeful in our attempt to treat disease and to make it go away. We don't like it, do we? Anybody like disease? No, we don't. Well, sometimes in order to understand a complex problem, it helps us to look at a less complex system. I say less complex. It's not that agriculture is much less complex when you start getting into it, but we understand a few things from this standpoint, and we're going to start with the analogy of a tree. You all are familiar with trees, right? I know that you have them around here. It's good. In some sections of New York, you won't. Some people don't know what trees are, except that they see them on TV. All right, so let's say that you have a fruit tree. It is now fruit season, and you have a fruit tree. What are some of the things that you initially notice about the tree? What do you take notice of when you see a tree? All right, well, if it's fruit season, you're looking at the fruit, right? What else? The leaves? All right, the size of it, the coloring, the size of the shape of the leaves, that kind of stuff, right? You can basically identify what the tree is by taking a look at it if you know what you're looking for. Well, the tree with the leaves and the fruit, the leaves and the fruit represent the very obvious things, symptoms, right? That's the obvious stuff. You got pain, you notice it, right? You've got itching, you notice it. You've got coughing, you notice it. It's not a surprise. It's things that are very obvious. You have those symptoms. And so like pain and coughing and so on and so forth. And if you have a tree that has bad leaves and bad fruit, then does it fix the problem to pick off the bad leaves and the bad fruit? No. You're only going to reduce the burden of disease by picking those things off, but you're not fixing the cause. And so if we, let's say, for instance, you have pain and you take a painkiller, does that take care of the cause? No. And even from a natural standpoint, you take some herbs or some teas or some supplements or other things like that in order to take care of the pain. Are you really taking care of the cause? No, you're just masking it, right? It's like plucking off the fruit and the leaves. It doesn't actually fix the thing. It just hides what's going on. So that wouldn't be a solution. So we must go deeper. What is it that supports the fruit and the leaves? Branches. All right, you all are sort of right, right? But I haven't seen very many fruit and leaves growing off of roots, right? All right, so the branches. And the branches support the fruit and the leaves, and the branches represent... Oh, yeah. Before I get to the branches. Yeah, if you have back pain because somebody stabbed you in the back with a knife, do you think it would be... it would do you a lot of good to just give you a painkiller and say, all right, you'll be fine. No, it'd be good to identify what the cause is so that you can take care of the cause, right? Like maybe go to the emergency department and see the surgeon and get the knife out. right? And then use some, you know, nice stuff to help you heal in the process and whatever. You got to get to the cause, right? You don't want to just deal with the symptoms. And so, yes, we have branches. The branches represent our behaviors, right? What you do supports then the symptoms that you have associated with what you do, right? And there are various different behaviors that we have, behaviors that include, like, eating, right? Any of you have that behavior? Yeah, what about drinking? I'm not talking about alcohol. I mean, you know, fluid in general, right? Yeah, okay. All right, what about breathing? Anybody have that behavior? Yeah, well, all right, good. So you have certain behaviors, certain actions that are associated that you must have in order to support then healthy fruit and healthy leaves, right? Do the branches support themselves? No, what do the branches, what supports the branches? The trunk of the tree. Anybody, well, let me just back up just a little bit. With the branches, if you have bad fruit and bad leaves, does it help to trim the branches? To prune the tree? Yeah, it does some, right? It just like picking off the fruit and the leaves, it helps to reduce some of the burden of the of disease, right? And so it gives the tree a little bit better fighting chance, but you still haven't gotten to the cause, right? So changing your behaviors, right? Change how you eat and how you drink and what you eat and so on and so forth. It makes some difference, but it's still not getting to the roots. It's still not getting to the cause, right? And so if we just stick with diet and nutrition and other types of things like that, we still haven't gotten to where we need to go, right? But it's better than just taking the things that hide the symptoms, right? All right, so the trunk. Anybody ever seen somebody actually treat the trunk of the tree? I mean, I know that you get maple trees and you tap them and you get stuff from them, but I've never really seen anybody actually treat the trunk. It's like the trunk, you know? You either cut the thing off or you leave it there. Now, sometimes people paint the outside of it so you don't get certain insects to go up and so on, but I don't know how much you can treat with the trunk. Well, the trunk represents your needs. Anybody here need anything? Yeah, don't you need stuff like oxygen? Anybody here not need oxygen? All right, you need water? Yeah? What about food? Anybody going to live for very long if you cut any of those needs out? Oh, well, you've got a little bit stored up of some of those things, and so you can last for a little while, depending on what it is, but you're eventually going to die because you need those things. Can you change what you need? No. Can you change the fact that you need oxygen? Just supplement that with nitrogen? Oh, okay, I'm just going to bring you all nitrogen instead of oxygen. How's that going to go for you? Not very good, right? Let's switch motor oil for water. How's that going to go for you? Smooth move, right? No, it's not going to work, right? You need what you need, and you can't change what you need. But your behaviors have to match with what your needs are, because if your behaviors don't match with your needs, then you're going to get all messed up, right? Well, the trunk doesn't support itself. What supports the trunk? The roots, right? So it's the roots that support it, and the roots represent your beliefs. You do what you do because you believe what you believe, right? You do what you do because you believe what you believe. Let's say, for instance, that you believe that you need Mountain Dew. Then what are you going to do? You're going to drink Mountain Dew. That's right. Your behavior will be associated with what you believe, right? It'll be tied with what you believe. But if you don't need Mountain Dew, but you believe that you do, and so you drink Mountain Dew as if you need it, but you don't, then what's going to happen? You're going to drink it, and then you'll have the effects associated with it. You'll see it in the fruit and in the leaves, right? If you believe that you need hamburgers, french fries, and so on and so forth in order to have a healthy diet or whatever. Well, whether you believe that or not, it doesn't matter. It doesn't change what you actually need. Because what you need is fixed. It's determined based upon you as a species, right? And you can't change it based upon what you believe about it, but what you believe about it will change how you behave towards it, right? Right. So is it important what you believe? Absolutely, yes. Because what you believe will impact how you behave relative to what you need, even though you can never change what you need, right? But if you know what you need, can that help you in choosing how you behave? Yes. Right. You can choose to breathe air and choose to drink water and choose to eat healthy food and so on and so forth, and it will have repercussions, consequences, effects in the fruit and the leaves. Right. Now, do the roots support themselves? No, what supports the roots? The soil. The soil represents our sources. Right? The soil represents our sources. If you have a diseased tree, you don't fix it by plucking the leaves and the fruit. You don't really fix the cause by pruning the thing. You don't necessarily fix it by cutting off the trunk or doing surgery to the roots. How do you fix the tree? You treat the soil. That's right. You treat the soil. You've got to get to the sources because that's where the foundation of the issue lies. So how could we understand sources from our standpoint? Well, you know, you can look at it from the various different things that you need. Well, you need oxygen. Well, would it be helpful to have a good source of oxygen? Yeah, so it's not polluted. You don't have all the carbon monoxide and all that other kind of stuff mixed in with it. And so if you have a polluted source, you can have the right behavior, but what are you going to have as an outcome? It's not going to be a good outcome. Why? Because you have a bad source. Well, what if you have polluted water? Or you exchange water for something that you don't need? Right? Well, then you're going to have effects associated with it. And the food sources that you go to, if they don't have the nutrients and all of that kind of stuff that you need, if it has a whole bunch of other stuff that you don't need, what's going to happen? Disease. Symptoms, right? Dysfunction. The internal systems are going to be deranged, right? That's what you're going to have associated with it. Let me ask you this. Do you need love? Is there anybody here that does not need love? All right, good. So we're still striking 100%. I have spoken to thousands of individuals in multiple countries and across the U.S., and I haven't found one yet that doesn't need love. All right, so we're still at 100%. Everybody needs love. Can you change that need? No. It's fixed. It's determined because of who you are, right? You need love. Now, just like you need oxygen, water, and food, you need love. So, what is the behavior associated with love? Like breathing is the behavior associated with, or the action associated with oxygen, right? The need for oxygen. And eating is the behavior associated with the need for food. And drinking is the behavior associated with the need for water. What's the behavior or the action associated with the need for love? Oh, thinking. All right. Thinking. So thinking is the behavior associated with love. Is it important what you think? And how you think? And is it possible that if you don't believe that you need to think a certain way, that you might behave the wrong way, think the wrong way, in relation to love, which you need. And if that's the case, could you possibly have symptoms, disease, bad fruit, bad leaves? Maybe so. All right. Everything that functions, functions by unchangeable laws. And anything that functions, functions by unchangeable laws. There are laws that govern the function of everything that functions. You can think of gravity, you can think of electricity, you can think of the whole electromagnetic spectrum, you can think of whatever you want to. If it is functional, there is a law that governs it, and if you study it long enough, you can find some physicist or mathematician that will come up with some equation to describe that law, right? And it's always that way. I could try the law of gravity over here and see what happens. Well, it worked. I can come over here and see what happens. Well, it worked. I can come over here and I can try and see what happens. It still works. Every time it works. Imagine if one time you jumped off the ground and you didn't fall back down. No, but every time you do, why? Because it always works. The law always functions the way that it functions. And it's true for the human being as well. We have laws that govern the function of our bodies. So, for instance, one of those functions is the function of blood sodium, salt levels in the blood. So the law of human beings' function is that your blood sodium level should be between around 135 to 145 milliequivalents per deciliter, the concentration. Now, if your concentration of blood sodium goes too high, will there be problems? Yes, because you're outside of the law that governs the function of your blood sodium levels. And if you're outside the function of the law, then there are consequences associated with it, symptoms and dysfunction and so on. And if it goes too low, same thing. That's right. You'll have a different set of symptoms. You'll have a different, quotes, disease or dysfunction associated with it, but the same thing functions whether you go this way or whether you go this way, right? Because the law is what the law is, and it doesn't matter if you know it or not, it is. And it doesn't matter if you like it or not, it is, right? It's true also for your blood pH. Blood pH is somewhere between 7.35 and 7.45, and that's the way it should be. Now, maybe you have been, you know, around somebody, and they say that you should alkalinize your system, right? And so you start drinking alkaline water, and you eat an alkaline diet, and of course, go look online and try to figure out what an alkaline diet is, and you'll look up 10 sites, and all 10 of them will have a different idea what alkaline diet is. But anyway, so you try to do that, and maybe that's not working, so you get some baking soda, and you start chugging that down, and so on and so forth. Let's say that you succeed at alkalinizing your blood, which, by the way, it's already alkaline. 7.35 to 7.45 is alkaline, right? So let's say that you succeed at alkalinizing it, and you get your blood pH all the way up to like 7.7. Guess what? You're dying. That's right, because your body can't handle that. Why? Because you're outside of the confines of the law that governs the function of your blood pH. And whether you knew it or not, whether you liked it or not, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're tall or short, fat, skinny, black, white, blue, purple, or in between. If you're a human being, that's the law that governs the function of your blood pH, and it is what it is. And when you deviate one way or the other, you have progressive dysfunction, right? Symptoms and so on. Temperature as well. Well, you know, 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, 37 degrees Celsius. I'm not sure why this one science has landed on a particular number rather than a range. Like, everything else is a range, right? Really, when you're used to measuring people's temperatures, human temperature tends to be a little bit lower than this, up to about 98.6, some people 99. So there is a little bit of range from that standpoint. that is normal. But let's say, for instance, you watch a movie and, you know, there's like Iceman on there and like it's all cool. And so you decide that's what you want to do. And so, you know, winter in New Jersey and the blizzard comes through and we're just going to try to get to a 20 below body temperature. You can try it, but what'll happen? You'll die, right? You won't survive it. Why? Because the law is what the law is. And it doesn't care if you know it or you don't, right? Gravity could care less if you knew about gravity or not. It still works, right? So, does it behoove you to know what the law is? Yeah, so then you can intelligently cooperate with it rather than going running off the deep end with it. Yeah, it does help. All right, let's look at it from the standpoint of a road. And on this road, you have health, right? On this road, it is relatively comfortable. But when you get off the road into one ditch or the other, it becomes uncomfortable. And things don't function as well as they should, and you don't have health when you get off the road. Well, the road includes those things that you need. You need oxygen, and you need water, and you need food. You also need warmth, right? A certain body temperature that you need to be in or that you need to produce, that the cells need to function. And so let's take that temperature as our example. Let's say, for instance, that your temperature starts going up. How do you feel? All right, so we call it a fever. You feel uncomfortable, right? You feel hot, it's uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good, and so now you want to do something about it. So you start sweating, and you fan yourself, you turn the air on, you get out of the heat, you do whatever you need to so that your temperature can get back down into the confines of the law that governs the function of your body temperature, and once you get back down into those confines, you feel okay, right? You had symptoms, and the symptoms are never good, by the way, right? They're never good. Why? Because if they were good, just imagine if you started deviating from the law and it started feeling better and feeling better and feeling better, what would you do? You would go off to oblivion happy. And I tell you this, God does not want you to go off into oblivion happy. He wants it to hurt before you go out that way. Why? Because he wants you to turn around. Right? He wants to bring you back. Right? So what if your temperature goes down? How do you feel? You feel uncomfortable again. This time you feel cold. What if you felt the same way if you went one way versus the other way? Let's say if you went off the road to one side, you felt cold. And you went off the road to the other side and you felt cold. Yeah, you'll still be uncomfortable, but you won't know which way you're going. So you wouldn't know which way to, how to respond to it, right? Am I, you know, if I'm feeling cold both ways, is it the kind of cold where I need to heat up? Or is it the kind of cold where I need to cool down, right? And the only way I find out is by, you know, you feel cold trying to warm up, and if you're on the wrong side, you die. Whoops. No, so if you go off the road the opposite direction, you feel a different way. Why? So that you can do a different thing about it in order to get back into the confines of the law that governs the function of your being, right? The symptoms are uncomfortable so that you'll do something about it because, frankly, you and I could care less about the law. What do we care about? We care about how we feel. That's right. And so God in his wisdom has tied how we feel with the law. So that as we deviate from the law, we'll feel it. So that we'll come back. Right? So that we'll come back. And it's by love that he has done that. Now let's say that you don't stop at symptoms. Your temperature goes up and it keeps going up. Now where do we get? All right, so it starts getting dangerous, right? You get to disease. Not only is it just feeling bad, now it's bad, right? You have actual dysfunction associated with that. And well, the reality is once you start deviating outside of that road, you have progressive dysfunction along the way, right? So now it's getting very dysfunctional. Now you have heat exhaustion or you have heat stroke. Now it doesn't just feel a little bad, it feels really bad. Why? Because you're really far from the law. And when you get really far from the law, it should feel really bad, because you really need to do something about it in order to get back. And sometimes, you know, we're proud individuals, aren't we? Sometimes we'll keep doing our own stuff our own way until it hurts bad enough. And I see that all the time because I work in a lifestyle center, and so people come to us from all over the place, and they usually don't come to us well. Right? Nobody sees the need to stay healthy because they feel okay. But it's when you're falling apart. It's when it hurts. It's when you get confronted with a life-threatening situation. It's when you hit the wall that you finally wake up and you go, oh, hang on. I need to do something about this. And maybe I need help with it. Right? Maybe I need help with it. It's finally when we get there that we're willing to cry out and ask for help. You know, if you're in heat stroke and you're about to pass out and you're puking your guts up and all that kind of stuff, you're okay with somebody helping you. When if it was earlier and you weren't feeling so bad, you might be like, no, I'm okay, thank you very much. You know, we're proud individuals. Well, if you go the opposite direction and you don't just stop at symptoms, you're going to hit disease down there as well. Maybe it's frostbite or chilblains or something like that. It hurts really bad. Why? Because you're really far from the law. And you really need to do something in order to get back into the confines of the law that governs the function of your being. Now, if you don't just stop at disease, if you don't just stop at symptoms, where are you going to end up? Death. That's right. Either way, you'll end up at death because it will become a progressive dysfunction until you get to the point where there is no more return, no more function, right? And as you mentioned, somewhere between disease and death is this gray zone out there that I haven't drawn in there, which is called the point of no return. There's a point where you're still alive, but you're not getting back. Right? It's true. Unfortunately, it's true, but it's true. Unless there's a miracle. Under normal circumstances, there's a point where you can get to where you're not getting back. And there are things that influence that. Let's say, for instance, that you're well oxygenated and you're hydrated well and you're well nourished and your temperature deviates and you get caught in a blizzard. Well, you might be able to survive a greater deviation in body temperature and get back because everything else was lined up. But let's say that you're unfit and you're poorly nourished and you're dehydrated and your oxygen status is really low and now you get caught in the blizzard and your temperature starts deviating. How much are you going to survive? Not as much, right? And so all of these factors come into play as well. The more laws that are broken in the more different ways they join. Right, and the impact is cumulative, right? And so we need to keep that in mind as well. But we also mentioned that there's something else that we need, right? What do we need? Love. That's right. Is it possible that love functions just like these other needs, just like oxygen and water and food and temperature, and that there's a law that governs the function of love, and as long as we live within the confines of that law that governs the function of love, we have health and it's comfortable and things are running well, but if we deviate from that law that governs the function of love, that there can be symptoms and progressive dysfunction and disease and eventually death. Maybe? Yeah, maybe. Maybe it works just the same. So health is proper function because the law is followed. Whether you know it or not, whether you're aware of it or not, whether you like it or not, if the law is followed, then health is the result, right? And disease is dysfunction because the law is broken. That's right. It's not legalistic, it's just the way things are, right? You could say that gravity is legalistic. It's not. It's just what it is, right? So, as was pointed out, actually our first response to the question, what's the cause of disease? Really, the answer is sin. If there were no sin, there would be no disease, right? And sin is a breaking of the law, right? It's deviating from the law. Well, in 1 John 3:4, we're told that for sin is the transgression of the law, right? It's the breaking of the law. What kind of law? Well, it's God's law. What's the foundation of God's law? Love. That's right. So it's a breaking of the law of love. And Jesus put it this way. He said, Matthew 22:37-40, he says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Jesus is pointing it out and saying it's all about love. That's right. It's all about love. And so disease, in many cases, is the result of a love problem. Disease, in many cases, is the result of a love problem. I tell you, we're going to get your world and turn it upside down. Why? Because we were born in a world upside down. And we've been in it so long, we think it's right side up. You ever met a crazy person? I've done psych rotations, I've been in psych hospitals and so on, not as a patient, as a doctor, thank you. there were a few times where I wondered whether I should have been admitted. But anyways, I have interviewed individuals that were very deranged in their thinking. Special powers, chips implanted in their brain, the military is controlling them, you know, the anchor man in the news is talking directly to them and giving them messages, the voices are screaming in their head to say, kill that person or kill that person, and they feel like they can't not do it, all of this kind of stuff. And have any of you ever tried to talk somebody out of their craziness? Anybody ever succeeded in talking someone out of their craziness? I haven't. I mean, it seems like you get a little, you know, they surface a little bit and then boom, right back. Maybe they surface a little bit and boom, right back. They just don't see it. They think you're crazy because you don't see the reality of their world. What if all of us were crazy and we all shared the same delusion? We would think that we were all normal. And who could talk us out of our psychosis? I tell you, it's our reality that we're crazy. We all are. And we'll find out how and why throughout this weekend that we are crazy. Now, there is a fundamental foundational law that we need to understand as well, and that is the law of cause and effect. We all understand this, right? You do something, something's the result of it, right? You have some kind of effect. There had to be something that caused it, right? So when we break this down, this law of cause and effect, we understand that every effect must have a cause. It doesn't just exist by itself. Right? There has to be something that caused it, but also that every cause must produce an effect. If the cause is there, then it has to do something, right? And there's a temporal association, there's a timeline associated with it, that the cause always comes first. And the effect always then comes after. So it would not make sense if you had an effect to look after that to find the cause. You should look before or at the time of, right, in order to understand the cause. And if the effect is present, then that means the cause or its secondary causes must be present as well. Because, again, the effect cannot produce itself. So if the effect is still there, then the thing that is producing it is still there. And why is that important? Because if the cause can be identified and removed, then the effect has to go away. Yes, logically. Now, there are secondary causes, and sometimes those are difficult to get at. Right? And sometimes those are irreversible, just depending on what the thing is. Right? But from a logical standpoint, if the cause is removed, then the effect must cease. And so we're interested in causes. Right? We're interested in causes. Because just to treat the effect will not take care of it. We must get to the cause. Now, we can understand this law of cause and effect by also understanding the laws of thermodynamics. You see, what thermodynamics tells us, one of the things that it tells us, is that all energy necessary for a system to function must come from outside of that system. Right? All energy necessary for a system to function must come from outside of that system. That means that a system does not produce all the energy that it needs in order to continue its own function. Because that's the case, you and I cannot just create a perpetual motion machine. You can't just create some machine that we put into motion and then it remains in motion under its own power indefinitely. Now, if you go to Google and you Google perpetual motion machines, you'll find thousands of them that you can buy. But they're not really perpetual motion machines. They're dependent upon light. Or they're dependent upon gravity, or they're dependent upon, you know, the Earth's rotation, and so on and so forth. It's dependent upon external forces that are normally around us that we don't usually take into account, and so it remains, quotes, perpetual motion because of that, but it's not because it has its own energy that it can continue its own function. Well, why consider that when you're talking about health? Well, the effect cannot create itself, because the energy necessary for it to occur had to come from where? Outside of it. That's right. So let's say, for instance, you have somebody that has breast cancer or they have prostate cancer. We'll just take the two most common male, female and male cancers, right? Breast cancer and prostate cancer. If you want to know why, where can you not look to find the why? Inside of it. That's right. You cannot look inside of it in order to find why. Because the why had to come from where? Outside. Right. So by studying the thing itself, you'll never understand why it came about. You will only understand what it is. Right? So by doing a biopsy and so on and so forth, you can classify what type of cancer it is. You can classify how aggressive it is based upon the cellular structure and so on and so forth. But you can never answer the question by a biopsy, why do you have breast cancer? Or why do you have prostate cancer? Because the cause had to come from outside. The energy necessary in order to cause it to happen had to come from outside of it, right? So we have cells, right? Cells are good things. We like them, the basic unit of life. And you and I have about 50 to 100 trillion cells in our body as adults. And we have around 250 or so different types of cells in the body. And each of those cells has a particular function. And your function as an individual, as an organism, is dependent upon the function of each and every one of the cells of your body. If you had a cell that had one particular function, and it was the only cell in your body that had that particular function, and if you lost that cell, you're in trouble because you wouldn't have any of that function anymore. If you had a billion of those cells that had that function and you lost one of those billion cells, well, you wouldn't even notice it, right? Because you're doing fine very much, thank you very much, with 999,999,999 of those cells left, right? So the fewer cells that have a particular function, the more you notice it when they lose their function, when they begin to dysfunction. And so sometimes it takes time to manifest a problem because the manifestation takes time to overcome many of the different cells that are there with a particular function before they become dysfunctional enough in number for you to then have effects associated with it. Are noticeable effects, I should say. So cells are kind of like little factories. And a factory, of course, produces a product. And in order for a factory to produce a product, what must it have? Okay, so it must have raw materials, all right? So we need to provide certain raw materials for the cells in order for them to function. And of course, those raw materials are the things that we already talked about. Those are the things of the oxygen and the water and the food and so on. All of these are chemicals. And the cells are chemical factories, and so the product that they produce will be a chemical product. So they'll produce proteins and cell signaling molecules and cell adhesion molecules and hormones and paracrines and autocrines and so on and so forth, right? All these different products that it makes, but it has to have the raw materials in order to make those things. Now, where is it going to get the raw materials from? Okay, so you've got to provide it. How many cells of your body need oxygen? All of them. All right, how many of them need water? All of them. How many of them need the food? All of them. So how are you going to get all of that to all of the cells so they can all get what they all need? Okay, so you got to breathe and you got to drink and you got to eat. So you have various systems in which they come into the body through, and then you've got to distribute it. And what's the distribution system? The blood system. All right, the cardiovascular system. So it's the blood that carries all of these things that you need to all the different cells of the body so that they can have what they need. And so you've got to be able to get the blood close enough to the cells so that you can diffuse those nutrients and oxygens or chemicals so that they can have everything that they need. What happens if you cut off the blood supply? The cells die. Why? Because they need those things. And they don't get what they need. Is circulation important? Yeah. A certain writer back in the 1800s said perfect health is dependent upon perfect circulation. Right? You've got to be able to get the supply to all of the different cells so that they can function how they need to function. And if you mess that system up, they're not going to function. Right, and depending upon where you mess it up will depend on where you get the dysfunction. If you cut off the supply to the heart muscle, it's a heart attack. If you cut off the blood supply to the brain, then something. Well, in Spanish, it's a brain attack, ataque de cerebro, right? But it's we call a stroke, right? If you cut it off to the kidneys, then you can get infarction that's there, and if you cut it off to the legs, then you can end up with gangrene and all sorts of stuff, right? Causes problems, dysfunction. Now, if you had a factory and you were producing a product and you had a supply line for all the raw materials that you needed, you still couldn't produce anything because you're missing something really important. All right, so you're missing workers. Now, in this scenario, my ability to draw in PowerPoint is very limited. And so I didn't draw in the nucleus and the Golgi apparatus and the endoplasmic reticulum and the mitochondria and the ribosomes and all of that kind of stuff. So let's just imagine that all of those guys are there. So you've got the machinery, you've got the workers, you've got the blueprint, you've got the raw materials. You still can't produce a thing because you're missing something really important. Ah, you're missing the energy. All systems that function, the energy necessary for a system to function must come from where? Outside, right? So it's got to be able to get the energy from outside of itself. And how many of your cells do you need to control their function? All of them. That's right. You need to control all of their function. Guess what would happen? If all of your cells decided, like they can decide, but anyways, that they decided all at the same time that they were going to function at maximum capacity, you would be alive like a few more seconds. Why? Because if they all went to maximum capacity, the heat in your body would just go skyrocketing up. The blood supply would be insufficient to supply everything that you need. All of your blood vessels would dilate. Your blood pressure would go almost to zero, and you would be done for. It would be actually very, very dangerous if all of your cells functioned at maximum capacity at the same time. Now, you've got to be able to limit some while you're increasing others. What happens when you eat a meal? You go to sleep. When you're listening to a lecture afterwards. Why? More blood going to the gut, less blood going to the brain, right? But when you're exercising, how well are you digesting food, right? When you're out there running and doing a marathon? Well, you're not. Why? Because you're diverting the blood flow to the muscles, but you're taking it away from the digestive tract and so on and so forth, right? So it all needs to be controlled. So where are you going to control it from, and where are you going to get the energy from in order for it to function the way it's supposed to function? The nervous system. And the form of energy is electricity that the cells primarily function by. You say, well, hang on, what? Well, if you go back to cellular biology, right? If you go back to that, you remember that you have a phospholipid bilayer, right? You have this membrane that's around the cell. Well, what does that phospholipid bilayer have in it? Well, it's got proteins, right? And it's got channels, and it's got sodium ATPase pumps on there and all that kind of stuff. And what are they doing? Well, they are maintaining a charge difference between the inside and the outside of the cell membrane so that at rest, the cell inside is about negative 70 to negative 90 millivolts compared to the outside of the cell. If you have really steady hands and a small voltmeter, you can put one of those little probes on the inside of the cell and the other one on the outside of the cell, and you can measure that difference. And then when there's an action potential or something like that, you can see it reverse, and you get almost to positive 30 or so millivolts on the inside with an action potential, and you get current, and you have resistance, and you have voltage, and you have all this kind of stuff. What's that? That's electricity, right? The cells are actually like little batteries. If they discharge, what happens? They're dead. Right. The only way, you can have all of the same chemicals, all the same materials, all the same stuff. But if you just let it come to equilibrium, you die. It has to maintain a difference, charge difference, in order for you to live. That's what drives the activity. It's electricity, the form of energy that the cells function by. And it's the nervous system that controls that for all the different cells so that you can have a controlled function. Now, what is the pathway? You know, for chemicals, the pathway is the blood. What's the pathway for this energy, this electricity, and the control of the function of the cells? It's the nervous system, and it's the nerves. Right? You, in anatomy, you've heard of this thing called a neurovascular bundle. Neuro, nerves, vascular, blood vessels, bundles. So they're bundled together. Why? Because every cell of the body needs the chemicals that the blood vessels are taking, and every cell of the body needs the electricity or the control that the nerves are bringing. And so it bundles. The Lord is good. He's a great designer, right? And the Lord has bundled it all together to take it to all the different parts of the body so that it can all be functioned together in a coordinated fashion. Now, let's challenge ourselves with another thought. All energy necessary for a system to function must come from where? Outside that system. All right, so where is the nervous system going to get the energy from in order to function? All right, so the brain is part of the nervous system. It's the central nervous system. Well, it's part of the central nervous system. Where's the brain going to get it from? No, that's the chemicals. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thoughts. That's right. You thought thoughts were the result of electrochemical activity that is in the brain, within the construct of the structure of the brain and the interneuronal connections and dendritic connections and so on and so forth, and that as long as you have electrical activity that is there in the brain and it's directed in a certain direction, then you'll have thought, right? That's what neuroscience will tell you. But they're wrong. They're wrong. Why are they wrong? Because they don't have all the picture. Let me ask you this. How much can the boards in this room think? The boards. They can't. How about this podium? No? What about I take one or two of you and we kill you, and a second after you're dead, let's find out how many thoughts you have. You still have all the material. Maybe we freeze you really fast. Right, some kind of cryo-freeze or something like that. All the chemicals, all of the materials, everything that's right there. How much can you think? You can't. Right. Is it the physical that creates the spiritual? Or is it the spiritual that creates the physical? Well, who created the world? God, and He is spirit. So God, whose spirit, created that which is physical. It's the same with us. It's not that the physical creates thought. It's that thought creates the electricity in the cortex of the brain within the context of all the neuronal structures and the interconnections and all that kind of stuff in order to then produce the electricity that is communicated down from the nervous system to all the different parts of the body. Right? And science is never going to discover that. Why? Because science doesn't have the capacity to study that which is not physical. Because you can't study it. You can't look at it under a microscope. You can't weigh it. You can't, you know, balance it. You can't do all of that kind of stuff. It's not something that you can put your mind... I shouldn't say that word. Mind is a spiritual thing. It's not tangible. That's right. So science is never going to come to it. Why? Because science is always under the impression that it's the physical that creates the spiritual. Right? That's the background, the foundation that they're coming from. And so based upon that assumption, they'll never discover this by looking for it. Do you think it's important what you think? Yeah. What do you think your thoughts should be based upon in order for you to be able to have the generate the right kind of electricity that will then control the cells the way that they're supposed to function? All right. Oh, yes. That's positive ones. And where do they come from? Well, they come from an organ that isn't physical. It's your spirit. Right? Remember at creation, God took man, he formed him out of the dust of the ground, and he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and he became a living soul. Right? So God took body, dust, and he mixed with it breath, spirit, and it became a living soul. Right? A living being, a living soul. And so the combination of the two then could think and reason and perceive and all of that kind of stuff. But where does the energy come in order for the electricity generation in the cerebral hemispheres and the cortex of the brain in order for the control and function of all of the body? Well, it comes through the spirit. Creating the thoughts, which then generate the electrical activity, which then is transmitted to all the different parts of the body. And so you have this train of events that leads to the cells getting exactly what they need in order to function, right? But it begins far beyond what science has looked at and science will ever discover, really. And we know it from God's word. Now, what is something that you would want to base those thoughts on? Love. You need love, right? Well, I'll tell you, the cells in your toenails, well, that's dead. All right, the cells that produce your toenails, they don't actually need love itself. And the cells in your heart, they don't actually need love itself. And the cells in your brain don't actually need love itself. They need the effect of it. What needs love itself? Your spirit. That's right. Love is the need of the spirit. But whether you have it or whether you don't, it will impact the body. Because the spirit is always communicating, right? Is always in communication with the body. You can't separate the two. Right? God put them together. And then you die. And then boom. Right? And they don't function individually. They function together. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. All right, so what about causes of dysfunction? Now that we see these various different ways that the cells function, their little factories, what are causes of dysfunction? Well, one of those causes of dysfunction is inheritance. Right? You can have a dysfunction because of inheritance. And what do we mean by inheritance? Well, we mean that there is a cause in a prior generation that changes the DNA in a way that is irreversible, right? And it manifests itself. Whether or not you treat the thing, there's no way of really getting around it. And you can't remove the cause because it's in a prior generation, right? You can't go back in time. And I don't mean just genetic. Every disease actually is genetic. You can't manifest a disease unless you have the genes associated with it, or you mess up the genes associated with it, right? So every disease actually is genetic, but from an inheritance standpoint, it means that the cause came in a prior generation and you can't do anything about its manifestation. You can't undo the thing, right? There are actually many diseases that are genetic, but they're reversible. They're reversible. This inheritance represents only about maybe 2-3% of diseases. And despite what we do and so on, we can't really undo it. Now you have a secondary cause, which is environment. You can cause dysfunction environmentally, right? Because those cells, they live in the context of a certain environment. You have to have a certain pressure, a certain temperature, and then there's a certain amount of electromagnetic radiation that's around you. And if you get too much or too little of these different things, then you can have problems associated with it. Just try in winter time to stick your tongue to a flagpole. And you'll find some dysfunction associated with that. Or just try to hold your hand on a burner when it's nice and red hot. There'll be some dysfunction associated with that as well. Or just try to stand in front of a car while it's going 100 miles an hour. Like the two Lamborghinis I saw racing themselves down the highway today. not in Alabama anymore. I don't think I've ever seen a Lamborghini in Alabama. Too much pressure. Things dysfunction, right? Bones break, lacerations, other stuff like that. It's not good. And so too much pressure, too little pressure, too much temperature, too little temperature, environmental temperature, too much radiation, so on and so forth, those will cause dysfunction. And if that happens, you usually know what's going on, right? Somebody stabs you in the back. Well, you got an idea of what happened, right? It's usually not much of a secret. Number three, you can have dysfunction because of raw materials, all right? So you need those various different things. But you can mess it all up. Why? Well, you can provide toxins instead. You have raw materials that gum up and mess up the system. Right, it makes it so that it does not function the way that it's supposed to function. Well, you can provide the wrong raw materials. You know, you think that you need Mountain Dew and you need water, right? Well, you provide the wrong raw materials, it's just not going to function the same way, and there will be dysfunction associated with it. You can have an imbalance of proper raw materials. So you need sodium, but, you know, you pour the sodium on and just eat it like, you know, it's not going to do you so good. But also, you can cut it out too much and your sodium levels go down, right? Of course, it's kind of hard to do because sodium's in a lot of the foods that you eat anyways, even the natural ones. But still, it's possible, right? All of these will eventually cause generalized dysfunction. Why? Where do the raw materials get into? They get into the blood. And when it gets into the blood, what happens to it? Yeah, it goes everywhere. It diffuses, right? So you end up having the same concentration in one place compared to another place. Let's say, for instance, you had a problem in your toe. And your doctor wanted to find out what was going on, and so they ordered a blood test. And you go to the lab, and the lab says, oh, okay, you've got a problem with your toe. Your doctor wants a blood test. All right, we need to go poke your toe. Huh? I don't think I want you poking my toe. Right? You're thinking you're going to go there and get your blood drawn where? In your arm, right? You think that's reasonable? The problem's in the toe. Why are you getting blood from the arm? Because the law of diffusion. That stuff mixes in the blood, and it has a fairly similar concentration in your toes as it does in your arm. And so you get it in the arm, and let's say you have gout, and you've got this big red inflamed big toe, and it hurts. And your doctor wants to know whether it's gout or not, and so they do a blood test, and they look for uric acid, and they find that your uric acid levels are high in your arm, but the problem's in your toe. So is uric acid the cause? Do we have any doctors in the house? No? Oh, too bad. All right. Healthcare professionals? All right, so I got a few. All right. You've all heard that gout, right, uric acid is the cause for gout, high uric acid levels. So, you know, you take allopurinol or whatever in order to decrease the uric acid levels, and once they go down, then the gout goes away. So obviously the cause is uric acid. It's not. It can't be. By law, it cannot be. Why? Yeah, well, why is the uric acid level going up? Exactly. And why is it affecting right there and not everywhere else? Right? They got it from your arm. Why isn't your elbow full of gout? Why isn't your wrist full of gout if they got it from your hand, right? Why don't you have it in all the other joints? Why is it just in that toe? There has to be something else right there that's causing the problem to manifest there. Uric acid is only the cofactor. There's got to be something else, right? What if you have a blockage in an artery? Right? Maybe it's a heart attack or something like that. You know, you've got this chest pain and you go into the ER and then they call the cardiologist and they whisk you off to the cath lab and they do some nice things to you and put this big tube in your groin and run a wire up into your heart and then they jump some dye in there and take some X-rays and they go, oh, you've got a 99% lesion right here and you've got an 89% one over here and you've got a 35% one over there. We're going to put a stent in that one and put a stent in that one and we're going to leave that one alone and now we're going to put you on a whole bunch of cholesterol medication and so on and so forth. And why? Because the cause was a lack of cholesterol medication? No, right? But why? All right, now, cholesterol, yeah, what's the cause? The cause of cholesterol, of course. No, it's not. Do you need the cholesterol? Yeah, you need the cholesterol for the thing to manifest, but is the cause the cholesterol? No. Why? Because just before that 99% lesion, guess what? It was clear. The reality is, if you look at it, it wasn't really, really clear. But it wasn't all full just before that. And just after that, it wasn't all full either, right? Maybe it was, let's say, 20%. But you got 99% right there. Why do you have 99% right there and not everywhere else? The concentration of cholesterol going through the blood was the same before it as after it, essentially. There had to be something going on right there in order to cause the cholesterol to accumulate right there, so you had a blockage right there. Thought-provoking, huh? All right, 4. You can have a cause of dysfunction coming from energy, right? Whether it is the wrong energy or it's not enough or it's too much or whatever, energy can cause local dysfunction, just like environment can cause local dysfunction, right? You can shoot yourself in one foot and the other foot's okay, right? You can burn one finger and the other fingers are okay. Well, from an energy standpoint, it can cause local dysfunction as well. Why? Because your nerves go from a specific spot in the brain here with several connections and so on to a specific spot in your body over there. And so on and so forth. It's all wired very specifically, just like the power company knows exactly who to send what bill to. The brain knows exactly where the information is coming from and where it's being sent to, because it's all wired specifically. And so you have a nerve going to one spot in your artery and another nerve going to another spot in your artery and so on and so forth. And you have one nerve going to the toe in that location, but it's not in the same toe in that location and so on and so forth. So you can have manifestations that are local associated with energy stuff, just as you could with environment. And then finally, you can have a cause of dysfunction that is the enemy. Right. You have the example of Job in the Bible, right? It wasn't a thinking problem. The Lord said he was a man, he was righteous in all his ways and so on. So it wasn't a thinking problem. It wasn't a love problem. It wasn't an energy problem. It wasn't a raw materials issue. It wasn't an environment issue. It wasn't an inheritance issue. The enemy got to him. Got permission and got to him, and there was real dysfunction associated with it, right? So these are the various different causes of dysfunction. And so when you're considering your case or families or others or so on and so forth, keep these in mind. Right? It helps you to narrow down. All right. Do you need love? Yes. What's the definition of a need? All right, something that you cannot live without. Very good. But there's another part of the definition. It's something that you can't live without, but which you cannot produce. All right? Something that you cannot live without, but also you cannot produce. Do you need oxygen? Yes. Sure. How much oxygen can you produce to live on?
None.
Do you need water? Yes. Yeah. How much water can you produce to live on? None. How much do you need food? How much food can you produce to live on? Fingernails? Skin? If you're flexible enough, toenails? You know, but essentially, you eventually get to real essential stuff, and you can't supply your own need, right? It's got to come from outside of you. So can you produce love? No, you can't. So is that just our problem in this room, or is it everybody's problem? That's everyone's problem. So if nobody can produce love, and everybody needs love, and I've run into, again, I've talked to thousands of individuals, and I haven't found one yet that doesn't need love. So if every human being needs love, which I agree with, it's true, and no human being is a source of love, where does love come from? All right. Yeah. Yeah, God is love. It's not just that God is love. God is the love exactly as we need it. In my mind, my thinking, our humans' need for love is the greatest argument against evolution. In my mind, it's the greatest argument against evolution. What is evolution based upon? It's based upon natural selection, right? So natural selection is where you have some kind of a mutation that happens that provides an advantage. So, you know, you have bacteria. It becomes resistant to the antibiotic. The antibiotic is applied. The others are wiped out. This one survives and grows and, you know, and so on and so forth. And so you have some kind of advantage that's given to the organism based upon some kind of mutation. And because of that advantage, it can survive and grow and multiply and so on and so forth, right? So natural selection takes some kind of change, some kind of mutation, and then provides an advantage associated with it. What if you had a mutation that caused you then to have a need for Pluto dust? What's going to happen? You better get some, that's right, because if you don't, you're going to die. You can't. So what's going to happen? You're going to die, that's right. So if you introduce into the species some kind of mutation that creates a need for something that there's not the source for, then you've just introduced death into the species, right? Because it needs something that it cannot supply, that there is no supply for. How long have human beings needed love? Right. Well, I mean, you know, if you look at historical records, at least back to Sanskrit writings and hieroglyphics and all that kind of stuff, we know that people needed love all the way back then. Yeah, biblical writings and so on and so forth, right? We know for thousands of years that the humanity has needed love, but we're still alive. What does that mean? That means that there's a source for love outside of humanity, and it is exactly what we need. That's right. That's right. And it's God. Now, this need for love and the fact that we can't produce it is a foundational issue when it comes to relationships with each other. Why? Let's imagine that you have a neighbor, and this is one of those neighbors that's always over asking for stuff. You know, they come and they knock and they're asking for a cup of sugar, and then they come and they ask for something else, and they come and they ask for something else, and so on. And one day there's the really desperate knock. You know something's really up, so you go to the door, you know, you can't ignore it this time. And you go to the door and you answer, and she's standing there and she's just desperate. She's found out that her daughter has been diagnosed with some rare terminal condition, and she's been doing her, she's seen the specialist. They say there's nothing that can be done about it. She's going to die, but she's been doing her homework on the internet, and she found a place in Russia that treats this condition, and they've got a 50% success rate. Certain death, 50-50 chance, and it only costs $500,000. And of course, it's Russia, so you got to pay up front before you go and get any treatment anyway. So she's coming to you as her source. I want $500,000. All right. So most of us are laughing at that in here. Why? Because most of us can. Yeah, right. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't give you $500,000 because I don't have $500,000. Thank you very much. You might be nice and you might have something lay around and you might give her $1,000, but then she comes back tomorrow and she wants her $499,999, you know. She wants the rest. And then she keeps coming back. She keeps coming back and she wants the rest of the $500,000. For her daughter to live. How do you feel?
Annoyed.
That's right. Well, yeah, you're annoyed. You're upset. You're frustrated. Why? Because you don't have what she needs. And she keeps coming to you to get what she needs. And you don't have it. But guess what? She's getting frustrated too because she needs it and she's not getting it. So when you and I go to each other to get love, that's what we're doing. We're going to someone who is not the source as if they are the source so that we can get what we need. And guess what? We get frustrated because they let us down. And they get frustrated because they can't make us happy. The problem is, we're barking up the wrong tree. Barking up the wrong tree. We're going to the wrong source. The roots are planted in the wrong soil. Whose responsibility is it for me to be filled with oxygen? It's mine. That's right. Exactly. I have to breathe. Whose responsibility is it for me to be filled with water? It's mine. I have to drink. Whose responsibility is it for me to be filled with proper nutrients? It's mine, right? I've got to choose it and I've got to eat it. Whose responsibility is it for me to be filled with love? All right. Have you ever felt empty when it comes to love? Anybody here ever felt less than 100% at any one time in your life when it comes to love? Yeah? Yeah? All right, me too. That's most of my life. Come on, I'm a human being. I teach this stuff, but every time I do, it reminds me, and I go, oh yeah, Lord, I'm a mess. I'm a mess. All right? So if you have ever been empty, even once, felt like you were empty, even less than full, even once, that's proof of something. Is it God's or is it mine? It's mine. Because the Bible says he does all things well. God does all things well. How often does God do all things well? All the time. So if it was God's responsibility for you and I to be filled with love, would we be full? Yes, because he does all things well. And how often would we be full? all the time. So if you are even once less than 100% when it comes to love, it is proof that it's not God's responsibility for you to be filled with love. It's yours. It's mine. That's right. Seek and ye shall find. Tomorrow, we are going to pick up here and go on. We're going to talk about the buffet of love. And we are going to enter into more concepts, more ideas that will turn our world on its head. I tell you, we are crazy. Legitimately crazy. And yet we all share this same crazy delusion together, and so we think we're all normal. And God desires so much to wake us up that we may see things the right way. And as he turns our world upside down, don't scream and holler. Don't fight, right? Let him reveal to you the truth, because it's only the truth that will set you free.
Amen. Right?
Let me pray, and then whatever you have to close, you can close with.